This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Chains of the Heretic, written by Jeff Salyards, performed by Chris Chung. Chapter 1. I sat in the wagon bed as we bounced over the uneven earth, having left the flat and well-maintained road behind miles ago. Sweat poured down my brow, dripping onto the pages, and I was irritated at the necessity of having to wipe it constantly. But it was that, or risk the sweat fouling my marks on the page, or staining the ancient manuscript in front of me. Besides the heat and the air so heavy it seemed to clog the throat, it was difficult to concentrate at the task at hand for other reasons. My mind kept drifting off, seeing those jackals trapped on the bridge out of Sunrack as it rolled out from underneath their horses' hooves, seeing them desperately fighting on, despite knowing there was no reprieve or rescue, their shields up to deflect the arrows raining down on them, several getting through, their armors and bodies bristling with shafts, and then, finally, hearing their screams as the jackals fell into the trench when there was simply no more bridge left to support them. We'd left the Jackal Tower with over 200 men. We'd left Sunrack with nearly a quarter of that dead or dying in our wake. The only upside to such slaughter was that we were unlikely to run out of ammunition or supplies soon. Even when I managed to block out that horrible scene, I found myself thinking about what a fool I'd been, allowing Skelana to get close to me, fostering it even, in my own fumbling fashion. I'd been warned again and again, and still, against that and what passed for my own better judgment, I'd not only encouraged her to treat Captain Kilcoyne, but nearly invited her into my own head. No, I had invited her. The peculiar thing was, she had resisted. She could have mined me for more damning information, and yet, despite betraying the captain and his Jackal Tower, she had chosen not to. Well, after kissing me deeply and bonding with me, of course, there was that. Damn me, but I was a colossal fool. There was a reason I really didn't have very good luck with women. I'd befriended Loy, though we had backgrounds as disparate as could be, and I didn't truly understand her. I respected her, found myself caring for her, and then, without warning, I'd been cradling her in my arms when she died. That should have discouraged me from opening up to another woman anytime soon, especially a Memrodon. And yet, I'd warmed to Skelana, and that had stirred feelings far more dangerous than those allotted to friendship. Even if she hadn't betrayed the tower, the infatuation would have been the height of foolishness. But of course she had, and in part thanks to me, so I managed to make foolishness an art form. I forced myself back to the documents, penning my translation, though it felt pointless. The likelihood of discovering our salvation in the brittle pages was, well, nearly non-existent. The hours and miles rolled by, and while I didn't unearth our salvation, I did encounter many interesting lines and references. When we finally stopped to rest the horses, I stood as much as the wagon allowed, hunch-walked to the front, stepped over the bench, and rolled my neck around, eager to share my meager findings with the captain. Vindoro had already jumped down into the grass to tend to the horses. I was surveying the barren area, the ground mostly small thorny brush, stones, a few twisted trees that looked tortured and tormented, and the last of their kind, and not much else. I was about to jump down myself when I noticed something exceedingly strange. We had settled near the shore of a lake, that in itself wasn't all that unusual, after leaving the road several days prior and trekking through the hilly province of Reglovia, we came across quite a few bodies of water, both large and small. But something about this lake seemed different. I shaded my eyes and looked across it. The surface was less blemished than most mirrors, perfectly reflecting the sky above. And it was as quiet as it was still, with no birds in the shallows, nor any flying overhead. The small trees around the shore were bare and stumpy, thorny brambles mostly, with sparse undergrowth. There should have been some animals, some semblance of life or activity. Lakes always drew animals and settlers to them, and yet this lake and the land around it were utterly deserted. I got down and walked closer, leaving all the Sildoon soldiers and their horses behind near the wagons. Some sticks and jagged rocks broke the surface of the lake near the rocky shore, but there wasn't even the slightest ripple around them. It was only when I was a few strides from the water's edge that I noticed something even more peculiar. A raven was lying on its side in the rocks, clearly dead, but not rotten or decomposing. While its eyes were gone, the body itself was in remarkably pure condition, like a grisly, gray statue. I knelt down and examined the bird, turning it over with a stick. It was as well preserved as some animals I'd seen in Highgrove University that had been fished out of tar pits, presumably hundreds of years after meeting their demise. The contours, the skin, the teeth, and claws of those mice and squirrels were all intact, as if they had just met their end. This bird was equally hardened for all posterity, its wings still folded along its sides, though not by having fallen into any tar or anything else, except perhaps the water itself, and it wasn't blackened, but the color of stone. I nudged the bird with my boot, expecting it to be heavy, but it left a small chalky smudge on my toe, and one brittle feather crumbled a little at the edge, but otherwise it remained the same. After looking up at the encampment, I decided to walk along the shore a bit, and in the span of 100 yards, came across several other animals equally preserved. 2 small sparrows, a bat, 3 mice, and a large crane, the vane and barb in its feathers perfectly intact. In each case, they all appeared dead for ages, and yet none had rotted like usual carcasses, which was decidedly odd, since any dead creatures above ground were subject to scavengers and elements. I even encountered what appeared to be a calcified eagle of some sort, its bearing still lifelike and proud, even if it was on its side in the sand. It was in such pristine condition, I almost expected it to unfurl its wings and take flight again. I walked the shoreline, wondering at this dead lake and its lifeless denizens. I'd never seen anything like it, or even heard of such a thing. It certainly wasn't natural. I knelt on some pebbles and sand, grabbed a large stick, and very slowly slid it into the unmoving water. I realized I was holding my breath and cursed myself a fool as nothing happened. What did I expect? A flash of lightning? A dead man to rise from the depths and claim me as another mummified victim? I tossed the stick into the water, watched it disappear, and even those small ripples looked reluctant and weak, as if the lake would not abide any disturbance, or was slumbering and not easily woken. A moment later, the mirror-like flatness returned. I reached forward, debating dipping the tip of a finger in, when I heard, "I would advise against that, archivist." Nearly falling in, I planted a hand on the pebbles before standing and looking at the captain. "Is it truly that dangerous?" Braelar was staring at the once regal eagle at his feet. "This predator thought so. I don't imagine you will instantaneously turn to stone, but the water is as caustic as you will find anywhere. They call it Lake Alchemy."
"I've never seen its like. If I didn't know better, I'd suspect some sorcery at work," I said, not entirely sure I did know better. He looked up at me.
"You are a learned boy, a scholar. I expect you would look to the natural for explanation first, yes?"
I stood up and dusted off my hands. "Well, before riding with you and witnessing the effects of Bloodsounder, and seeing a Memrodon blind a battalion of hornmen or imperial troops, I wouldn't have put much stock in magic at all. But clearly some things in this world extend beyond the pale."
Braelar drummed the fingers of his left hand on the flail.
"There is truth in that, I grant you. And yet I'd wager this lake is not cursed at all,
Not in any kind of supernatural sense, at least. Something in the waters here did this. He pointed at the eagle.
Unusual?
Yes.
Magical?
Doubtful. After hardly speaking to the captain the last few days, I was reluctant to provoke him, but found myself saying,
Well, regardless of the cause, this is the most blighted body of water I have ever seen.
A half-smile came and went like a flicker.
That we agree on. Where we truly diverge is whether or not we consider it folly to stick our fingers in a blighted lake. Awfully difficult to write if acid eats the flesh off your finger bones or turns them to chalk. If you must satisfy your curiosity, at least use your offhand, yes?
He turned and started heading back to the convoy, when I said, I discovered more. In the second chest. Braelar pivoted and walked back towards me.
And yet instead of informing me immediately, you chose to play with dead things?
Well, given what you said, the other night that is, I wasn't sure when the right time to approach you would.
If you cannot abide being berated occasionally, you really should have stuck with chronicling the exploits of wheat merchants, rather than accompanying the most hardened military band in the world.
The return of the twitch smile told me that was as warm a response as I was like to get.
Now, what have you discovered?
I need to have my notes and translations to give you a full report, and it is nothing so good as explaining how Sinead did.
Enough qualifiers.
Well, the last time I mentioned some accounts like this, you were skeptical, so I waited until I compiled several of them, and
if you do not arrive at a point immediately, I will throw you in the lake and watch you turn to alabaster.
I pointed at Bloodsounder. I came across several more references, in independent sources, describing weapons like that, called sentries. Most of them called the wielder and the weapon itself by the same name, like Grief Tongue that I told you about.
And?
He asked, none too collegially. And there were several more accounts, with multiple witnesses, of weapons like Bloodsounder allowing the wielder to pass through the God Veil.
There are also accounts of manticores and winged women who cannot bear children and steal them from new mothers. What of it?
I folded my arms across my chest. I thought the same reading enduring accounts of Memrodons. The captain looked ready to skewer me again and stopped himself, with some effort.
Point taken. And still, even if true, this has little to do with the here and now, and helps us not at all.
Perhaps not, I conceded carefully. But do you recall the High Priest of Truth I told you about? And Roviak?
The one who dismembered memory witches to plumb their secrets? Yes, the name is not easily forgotten.
Well, I came across a later account by a high priest named Luski. He'd read Enroviak's account of the grass dog memory witch who'd purged herself at the God Veil. He was no less skeptical than you.
I like this one already.
But it was balanced out by curiosity, and judging from his tone, he was the sort who had to see a thing with his own eyes before disparaging, or believing. Braelar's eyes narrowed.
My threat to throw you in still stands. I do hope you are spiraling towards something remotely relevant.
Well, I said, wishing I had my notes with me, but not wanting to risk greater wrath by running off to get them. It took him some time, but he managed to capture a memory witch of his own.
I imagine they were more plentiful then.
Yes, her name was Kinmera, and he took her to the God Veil, though with fewer witnesses than his predecessor had. The first time. Braelar seemed, if not outright intrigued, at least mildly curious.
Go on.
Well, Kinmera had heard all the tales, of course. Anyone who approached the Veil was driven mad or simply snuffed out. And she begged him not to force her towards it, promised to do anything else he asked, but her pleas were not answered.
I assumed not,
or you would not be wasting my time with this tiresome tale. Please proceed to the heart of this, Arki."
Lusky made it sound as if he was of two minds, but he still ordered her to walk towards the veil, exactly as Enroviak had done, fully expecting her to perish, but wanting to be certain for himself.
Braelar scowled. "You do not know what a heart is, do you not, scribe?"
"Well, Kinmara didn't have her wits stolen, and she didn't fall down dead. She got within 5 feet of the god veil, and while she went towards it with tears streaming down her face, she returned calm, serene even. And when Luzki pressed her for her impressions, all she could say was that she had been cleansed."
I paused for effect.
"Clean?"
"Yes," he said. "I did hear you the first time, and I am aware of the meaning of the word. What of it? Perhaps she never possessed the ability to fletch dreams or walk among memories in the first place. All we have in this instance is the word of a priest." I opened my mouth to object, and he pressed on. "Fine, several priests, then, but all of them long dead. I assume Lusky didn't want to anger his clerical fathers by having a dozen notarized witnesses in attendance when he performed this test."
True, that would have certainly been impossible, but Lusky, feeling that he truly discovered, well, rediscovered, really, a secret about one of the heretics of their order, chose to explore it further. To repeat the experiment, as I said, this was the first venture. The second, he did have witnesses, and the third, more still, and each time Kinmara survived. It was only after the fourth that he presented his findings to some older legates in his order, substantiating what Enroviak had claimed at least a century before. Now Braelar's curiosity was piqued.
And did they burn this exceptionally thorough holy man at the stake for forgetting the cruel lessons of history?"
I shook my head. According to his own account, the order dismissed his research and commanded him to discontinue under threat of protracted death.
"At least they are consistent. And did he comply, or was his record cut short as well?"
Wisely, Lusky didn't push the issue, no doubt valuing his skin over any zealous pursuit of proving his point. He had no wish to be a martyr, but he did privately harangue them for being skittish fools, even as he discontinued. Or at least he stopped jotting down his impressions or discoveries if he didn't heed the warning. The captain knelt down, picked up a flat round stone, turned it over in his hand, and tossed it into the air.
"I will admit, regardless of whether these accounts are mired in falsehood or fiction or delusion, they are intriguing."
He cocked his arm back and sent the rock flying, watching as it skipped 6 times before sliding under the surface, the ripples leaden and disappearing quickly.
"But even if true or accurate, they still do not help us in the here and now."
I countered, "If they are true, perhaps they could help you cleanse yourself when you are flooded with memories. Maybe you don't need a rogue witch or Memrodon at all. You only need to approach the God Veil. Now, that won't help you defeat Sinead or reclaim the Memrodons, but if it's true..."
If... "You would have me gamble my life on the suppositions of some poorly substantiated claims from a millennium ago?"
"Centuries, not a millennium." I resisted the urge to grind my teeth together. "Why have me sift through all these tomes at all if you're simply going to dismiss everything I uncover?"
Braelar gave me a withering look. "You overstep, archivist. As always, your job is to simply translate and relay. Mine is to make sense of the findings and determine what, if anything, to do with them. You have done a solid job on the whole, though somewhat slow. But do not mistake my small praise for license to question my every decision."
I was about to protest that his praise was mean indeed, when I saw Venduro coming down the small hill.
"Cap," he called out.
Braelar turned and looked at him.
"Sergeant, what can I help you with?" Vinduro appeared ready to say something when he suddenly took notice of the rocky shore and slowly scanned the well-preserved animals near the water's edge.
Got to say, you do have a soft spot for all kinds of places dead, deserted, and otherwise queer.
Braelar's eyes narrowed to slits again as he stared hard at the younger man.
I do hope you didn't jog all this way to discuss aesthetics. If so, jog right back up that hill.
The sergeant shook his head.
Can't say that I did, Cap. Just kind of hit me is all. But thinking you'll want to be done gazing at the waves and getting all aesthetical yourself. Well, if there were waves to speak of. Which there ain't. That's the real peculiar thing, if you ask me. Which, of course, you didn't.
No, the captain said, slowly and with great effort. I did not. What I did ask is why you are here.
Begging your pardon, Cap, but that weren't quite what you asked. Implied, maybe, but what you...
I'm not sure if you were deliberately being obtuse or if Muldoose was right in guessing that you had been kicked in the head by your horse. Report, Sergeant. Immediately.
Vinduro nodded.
I'm here on account of Muldoose, Cap. Something's got to be done.
Oh? The captain asked. And what would you have me do, precisely? Do you imagine that I can undo Ruzjenna's memory craft and restore him? Make the sands in the hourglass flow up instead of down?
Vinduro looked to me, and I shrugged my shoulders and gave him a sympathetic look back.
Well, maybe no undoing what's been done, but... And this ain't me telling you how to, Captain Cap, make no mistake. Thinking it might be a good idea for you to talk to him.
Talk to him, Braelar repeated, without inflection.
Ah, yep. A little while ago, Sergeant of Scouts came back. The little one, Rudgy, with the freckles and upturned nose.
I am aware who my Sergeant of Scouts is, Sergeant of the Obvious.
Right. Well, she reported to Muldoose, or tried to anyways. He looked ready to rip her in off. That is, if he had two good arms. Hard to do much ripping with just the one. Anyway, he cursed her out, still slurring, and while she took it well enough, he dismissed the hells out of her before I heard what she saw or didn't see.
The captain looked displeased, though whether because of receiving a half-report, hearing his lieutenant's condition, or something else, it was impossible to say. I'd seen Rudgy once or twice before. She was one of the handful of women in our company. In Anjuria, a woman might be pressed to fight if her home were invaded, but I'd never heard of any being part of the military. The Sildoon had no such compunction, and while they didn't have a large contingent of female soldiers, they certainly existed here or there. I wondered how they dealt with being surrounded by coarse men, especially those prone to violence, but I assumed they must have been able to hold their own.
You do realize, Braelar said, snapping off every word, that the advantage of having officers at all is that they can handle issues themselves and only alert me to the ones that require my immediate attention?
Vinduro nodded. I hear you, Cap. I tried talking to Muldoose to find out what Rudgy reported, and he near bit my face off too. Worse than usual, I mean. Never seen him like this, and when he dismissed the elves out of me, just went back to closing his eyes and propping a tree up with his back like he's been doing. Figured you'd want to know about it, is all.
Then he pointed at the rushes.
Aw, plague me. Hate to see that.
I looked where he indicated, and saw a mummified bird of some kind.
What's the matter? Why? That's a duck, he said.
As if that explained everything.
And what is the significance? I asked. Why is that worse than a crane or any other dead thing on the shore?
Vinduro replied,
Just got a soft spot for them is all.
Ducks? I asked.
Ah, yep. Back where I come from, my tribe, they put a lot of stock in ducks. Our totem, as it were.
I thought he might have been putting me on, but if so, it was masterful, as his face was as flat and expressive as the lake. I asked again,
Ducks? Ducks,
he said.
You name another animal that can walk, swim, and fly that well. Go on, name one.
Can't, can you?
That's because there ain't another. Leastwise that I know about.
Kind of special like that, ducks are.
I had to admit, I'd never thought about it like that before. Still, a totem? He turned to Braelar.
Always struck me as all there weren't no duck tower. In Sunrak, that is.
As soon as the words were out of Vindoro's mouth, it looked like he wished he could recall them. Hearing the name of the capital city we were all fugitives from, the captain's already dark mood went all black. Without another word, he stalked up the hill, one hand on Bloodsounder. Vindoro kicked a piece of driftwood.
Plague me, just never know when to shut my plaguing yap.
He started up the hill as well. I glanced around. Vindoro did have a point earlier. Between haunted tombs, forsaken temples, deserted plague villages, and now desolate and deadly lakes, the captain did seem to be drawn to the strangest and least hospitable locations in the world. And with that, I followed the two of them away from the eerily still water and the odd bestial corpses that ringed it. Chapter 2 Braelar, Vindoro, and I walked through the pickets and tents, and Sildoon nodded or saluted the sergeant and captain, and pointedly ignored me. Though Skilana was a manipulative viper, she at least had been one other person in the company I could chat with, who was also an outsider of sorts. With her gone, I was relegated again to the fringes, or even farther, given the captain's foul mood and Vindoro doing double duty of late. When I saw that we were heading towards Muldus, I nearly walked off towards the wagon instead. He was difficult enough to deal with under the best circumstances, and the last few days had not been the best. Despite all their bickering, it was clear he and Hughspear were close, and no change in the older lieutenant's condition had to be weighing on him. But even if Hughspear had been back on his feet, Muldus himself was hardly better, still stricken by whatever ruse Jenna had done to him in Sunrak before Braelar brained her. Still, if calamity were approaching, it was better to hear about it now than to sit in the wagon and wonder, dreaming up the worst scenarios imaginable. So I followed the captain and sergeant. Vindoro looked at me and whispered,
"Best not to mention the eye, or the face, or really anything about him. Ah, yup, best not to say much of nothing."
Sound advice. The pale lieutenant was ignoring us as we approached, back against the gnarled trunk of one of the odd, twisty trees, his eyes closed. Captain Kilcoyne asked,
"So, answer true, lieutenant. How are you faring?"
I was fairly certain Muldus wasn't sleeping, but he took his time opening his eyes and replying, and I understood instantly why. The left side of his face was still immobile, and his words came out slurred.
"Plaguing fantastic, Cap. Never been better. Can't barely use this arm for shit. Sight's all blurry. Got the balance of newborn colt. The energy of an old man. I..."
He swallowed hard, and it looked like it took real effort.
"Yeah, real plaguing good."
Muldus closed his eyes again and leaned his head back, and I was secretly glad of it. Seeing that drooping eye on one side and murder in the other was as disconcerting as it got, no matter what warnings Vindoro gave. For once, Braelar seemed at a loss for what to say. Slowly, he went down on one knee and laid his hand on the big man's shoulder.
"You know as well as I, the effects of some memory magic aren't permanent."
Without opening his eyes again, Muldus slurred.
"Ain't like you to deal in false hope, Cap. Figure you owe me better than that."
"Very well. No one knows if you will regain what you've lost. But you are alive still. That's something. And so long as you manage to remain so, you will have the chance to visit some measure of vengeance on Senid. Hold on to that, if nothing else."
Muldus laughed. Though with only half his mouth working, it was a broken, ghastly thing.
Hate's the only thing keeping me going right now. That, and trying hard not to ship myself. Got no time for nothing but those two things.
Braelar grabbed Muldus by the arm that seemed nearly paralyzed and shook him hard.
You will make time. You are still an officer of the Jackal Tower. The men depend on you. I depend on you. Do your job. Stew in your self-pity all you like, but maintain and do your job, Sildoon. I owe you the truth, yes? Well, you owe me your service, and you will perform your duties to the best of your abilities, even if they are halved. You might very well shit yourself, and if you do, you will wipe it off and keep doing your duty, as you have always done. Do you understand me?
Muldus opened his eyes again, and the good one was focused and hot as he jerked his shoulder away.
Duty and performance, is it? That's rich, coming from you. How many times did me and Hugh, Ven, even your plaguing scribbler there, cover for you, prop you up when your flair was doing its best to lay you low? More times than I can plaguing count is how many. And now Hugh is husked, and me... Well, I can barely sit the saddle, or walk 20 paces without getting spinny like I've been drinking half a day. All I ever been good at is fighting and teaching other whelps how to fight. But now I couldn't hardly take Arky there. Even jawing at you now is winding me. Lot of plaguing good hate does when you can't even...
Braelar buffeted him across the chest with the back of his hand, rocking the beefy lieutenant into the tree. Muldus started to push off the bark, mostly with the right arm, when Braelar backhanded him in the chest again. I'd seen Muldus angry 100 times, but for the first time witnessed naked fury contorting half his face, with the other oddly slack. I thought for sure he would strike the captain back, and looked around, noticing Venduro was doing the same. Braelar hissed.
We are as we are, Muldus. Damaged, diminished, yes, but not dead. Not yet. And until such time, you will get your ass out of the dust and do your duty. I do not care if the men see you wobble, or curse, or struggle, but they will not see you succumb. I thought we were damned in the streets of Sunrak, penned in as we were against overwhelming odds, and I was willing to offer myself up, just as you were, for a chance to spare the men. Our men. But that was a mistake. We fought free at tremendous cost, Lieutenant. But free we are. And now we die with weapons in hand or readying the troops, no matter what else befalls us. We do not surrender. We do not succumb. And we do not lie in the dirt bemoaning our fates. Have I made myself clear?
Muldus glared at him, and I half expected him to reach for his falchion or try to grapple the captain. But instead he turned and spat into the dirt. Or tried. At least half the spittle landed on his chin, and Muldus laughed then, reached up with his good arm, wiped it off with his fist, then shook his head.
Real plaguing inspiration to the troops I am.
Venduro said,
They don't look to you for spitting lessons, Mull. Just being there among them, that will go a long ways. They just need to see you is all.
Muldus glared at the sergeant as Braelar stood back up.
You think so, do you? Just me tripping amongst the troops going to boost morale, is it?
Venduro didn't hesitate.
Not the tripping part so much now. Maybe you ought to just settle for standing for now, leaning against something. But I up, telling it true, we need you. So do what Cap here says. For once.
He smiled. Muldus did not. Braelar offered his arm, and Muldus glared at that too. But the captain left it hanging there until Muldus finally clasped forearms and Braelar hoisted him to his feet. Muldus hadn't been exaggerating his condition. He did look besotted. But he found his footing and nodded once. The captain gave his big shoulder one more squeeze.
Very good. Now then, let us check... Venduro interrupted.
Cap.
He pointed, and we all looked and saw Sildoon running towards us, covered in the dust of the road.
He thumped his chest and spun his salute.
Report, Sildoon.
The soldier replied. Ways clear ahead, Captain. Far as we can tell, that is. But we got company from the rear.
Braelar said, I imagine if it was the Imperial Army on our heels, you would have a bit more urgency in delivering the news, yes?
The soldier nodded. Sorry, Captain. Couple of scouts ought to be here straight away.
Braelar took a step forward so that the soldier was close enough to smell his breath.
Are you trying to tell me that the only Sildoon who can actually inform me of anything have yet to arrive? I do hope you didn't interrupt us here just to tell me that, because then I would be left thinking you are either a simpleton, or you are intentionally doing your best to frustrate me, and neither option will do.
The soldier turned crimson and stared straight ahead. No, Captain. That is, I only meant to say that the scouts are escorting your sister. They'll be here shortly.
The captain stepped back and nodded. Muldus shook his head and said,
Well, ain't that a hard kick to the jewels?
The reporting soldier glanced at him after hearing the muddled words, and then quickly looked away, but not before Muldus noticed.
You got anything else to say, you dumb prick? That the sum total of your report? Anything else you want to add just now?
The soldier kept his eyes fixed straight ahead.
No, Lieutenant.
Good. Then get your poxy ass out of here, you stupid oar son. Dismissed.
The soldier saluted again, spun on his heel, and headed towards the rest of the troops with the fastest walk possible, clearly glad to be away from his temperamental officers.
Venduro puffed out his cheeks and exhaled loudly.
What are you supposing that means, Cap? Soff following us? Showing up?
Muldus replied before Braelar could.
Can't be nothing good, I'll tell you that plaguing much.
The captain locked his hands behind his back and started walking.
I cannot say what she intends, or what motivates her from minute to minute. I never could. But we would not have escaped Sunrak without her surprising intervention. That much is certain.
Muldus said,
You can't seriously be thinking of welcoming her with open arms, Cap. Been betrayed by one Memurdon bitch already, and they all lick Sinead's rings now, every last one of them. Mems are the enemy, every last one.
Braelar gave a twitch smile.
Perhaps. But I doubt very much the Emperor authorized her to help destroy an Imperial battalion. She acted on her own. I reserve judgment as to what game she plays, but she did aid us. No doubt for her own purposes. But there is a good chance we would all be dead or in irons if she hadn't assisted us. There is no disputing that.
Muldus spit again, and managed it only slightly better now that he was upright. Then he slurred.
Mistake to trust her is all I'm saying, Cap. Plaguing huge mistake.
The captain started walking to the camp.
That is entirely possible. We shall see.
Chapter 3 Three riders crossed the field towards our camp, and with her scaled cuirass and red cloak and hair, it wasn't difficult to pick out Sofjian in the middle. The two Sildoon escorting her were hanging back slightly, whether out of fear, distaste, or healthy respect, it was hard to say. One of them I recognized as the beak-nosed Bank, an impudent soldier whom Braelar had to browbeat earlier when we captured Henslester. The captain, Muldus, Venduro, and I waited for the trio to rein up. Asmorgon was there too, impossible to miss, as he towered over every human I'd ever seen and made Muldus look svelte, thick with muscle and fat. When I first saw him in the Jackal Tower, I hadn't realized he was a lieutenant. And it was only after we fled Sunrak that I saw he was in our company at all. Being unknown and massive, and with a mean smile mostly hidden in a bristly beard that could have been home to several small animals, he was intimidating, and made me wish Hughspear was standing in his place instead, and hope against hope that he might recover. The horses halted in front of us. Braelar said, flatly,
"Sister?"
"Brother," Sofjin replied. She looked over her shoulder at Bank just behind her, and then back to the captain. "While I do appreciate the armed guards, it was hardly necessary. I do not require protection, and if I'd intended to attack, I can assure you they would hardly have slowed me down." Maldus looked ready to spit, and then reconsidered, given how challenging that was proving of late.
"Memrodon's got no immunity to weapons. Just ask your dead sister."
Sofjin took Maldus in, head cocked slightly, and if he felt uncomfortable beneath her gaze, he gave no sign. Then she said, "Well, Ruse Jenna cannot argue your point, though it appears she struck first, and hard. Let me guess, limbs not working properly, blurry vision, dizziness, fatigue, half that horrible mouth of yours frozen to muddle your words, and an even worse disposition?" Maldus laid his hand on the pommel of his falchion.
"Only need one good limb, you mouthy bitch."
"And I need less than that to dispose of the likes of you." She eyed him up and down. "Especially in your current condition. You have spittle on your chin." As Morgan boomed a laugh.
"She's got you there, Molly. Sounds like you got wet mushrooms in your mouth, and you've been hamstrung real good, too."
Maldus didn't bother looking up at the lieutenant.
"Watch your plaguing tongue, ogre."
"Sure thing, mushrooms. Sure thing."
Before Maldus could respond, Sofjin turned her attention back to her brother. "But I didn't come here to squabble with you or your men or to do battle. In fact, I could do with a rest. I've developed an unhealthy habit of coming to your rescue, though it appears I did not do nearly enough. How many men do you have remaining?" She looked back at the jackal's soldiers.
150? Perhaps a few more than that?"
Braelar smiled, or snarled. Sometimes it was difficult to tell the difference.
"Perhaps. But depleted or not, you clearly have assisted us. There is no doubt on that count. The question, as always, is one of motivation. Just as you did in the plague village and on the road home against the Hornmen, you do nothing without being driven by the ulterior. So, why did you help us escape from Sunrak, sweet sister?"
She swung her leg over and dropped from the saddle, as ever with grace and no small amount of haughtiness, despite being covered in dust and looking tired beyond measure. "I'd pretend to be wounded, but I simply don't have the energy for games. Helping you escape was the least of it, really." Braelar looked intrigued.
"Oh, and how was that?"
She pulled her rancer out of the long leather sleeve on the side of her horse and dropped it over her shoulder.
"Would you be so kind as to have one of your men tend to my horse, Bray? I'm afraid I didn't think to bring a second mount, and he could do with some care. I'd do it myself, but beyond fielding your questions, I will also need to rest. And food. I've been in the saddle for most of the last 2 days, and have barely closed my eyes."
Maldus was not sympathetic.
"What makes you think you're riding with us? You're licking Sinead's hairy jewels now, which makes you the enemy, no matter what you did in Sunrak."
"Which makes me doubly glad you are not leading the troops," she replied. "While my brother is stubborn to the point of madness, he does very little without considering things from all angles. One of his few redeeming qualities, really."
As Morgan spoke, his voice rumbly and growly and difficult to discern, like it belonged to a brown bear that had somehow learned human speech, but utterly failed to master enunciation and clarity.
"You going to let her squawk at you like that, Cap?"
"Her squawk, loathsome as it is, has the ring of truth to it."
Braelar pointed at one of the soldiers who had dismounted and was standing at attention.
"Many thanks for escorting my sister. Please take her horse and treat it as your own. While her tenure here could prove incredibly short, let it never be said we are poor hosts for the duration."
The Sildoon saluted, and while he looked none too happy, said, "Aye, Cap," before taking the reins. Sofjian nodded. "Many thanks." And then she seemed to catch herself as she looked at our small group. "I see the ogre there, of course, but where is Hughspear? I do hope Ruzjenna didn't strike him down. Of all of you, I enjoyed his company the most." Vinduro replied, "Alive, but Ruzjenna husked him good. He hasn't come to at all, not even stirred a little. Can you help him with that?" Maldus gave the sergeant a black look with his good eye, and Vinduro held up his hands. "Memory magic, Dunamin. Maybe it can help him too. You ain't seen him lately, Mole, but it's bad. Real bad." Sofjian gave a small, sad smile. "I can take a look at him, but I am skilled in the art of rending, shredding, and destroying. Repair is best left to those with more tender talents. If Skilana hadn't proved herself a serpent, she would be my first suggestion." Vinduro's face fell, and she reiterated, "I will look, though. I will look." Maldus used his good arm to push Vinduro back.
"Sergeant here ain't speaking for us, witch. Cap'll decide who looks at what around here. It were me, you'd get a good look at the bottom of my boot and nothing more."
"I'm sorry," Sofjian said. "I couldn't quite make that out. It sounds as if you have half a loaf of soggy bread in your mouth."
"Go fuck a leper, you haughty," Braelar shouted.
"Enough, the both of you."
When Muldus and Sofjian remarkably held their tongues, he continued.
"Now, as much as I enjoy and even admire a good dissemble, Sof, the laws of hospitality dictate that good guests would do well to answer direct questions with direct answers. You said there was more beyond clearing our path. Explain."
Sofjian nodded. "So I did. I have been following you the last 2 days, trying to scrub the land clean of any of your memory debris you leave behind." She looked at Vinduro. "As I said, far better at obliterating than healing." Then she turned back to Braelar. "While I was there when a good chunk of this company was hung, there are Memrodons bonded to the rest, and surely Sinead has them trying to track you. So I cleared your trail as much as I could, and picked up pieces of it, and scattered them around further afield, hoping to prevent any other Memrodons from hounding you. I cannot promise it will work. You have a lot of men. And while I disregarded any memory trails I could have hunted myself, that still left a large number. Have I mentioned that I haven't slept?"
"You did," Braelar replied. "And yet you still haven't answered my question, sister. And I'm afraid until you do, you cannot remain in this camp. Why do you help us? You are beholden to Sinead now. You're either attempting to betray him or play us, and neither would prove a wise move."
She turned back around and faced us, the lightning bolt of a vein pulsing in her forehead. "No, forgive me. As I said, I am exhausted." Soph lowered the rancer and stuck the butt spike in the earth. "I would have guessed my actions in Sunrak spoke for themselves, but I will not live under Sneed's yoke. It was difficult enough being controlled by a tower commander, but at least Darzak is a fair man, honorable, if hard. Now that Sinead is unopposed and unchecked, his ambitions are limitless. He will lead the Sildoon to ruin, and with him, all Memrodons leashed to his hand. You are fighting against that, as is Thumar, I suspect. So I fall in with you, not out of any loyalty to you, of course, I have none, but because I see no other choice." Braelar Twitch smiled and said,
"You do know that's exactly what we would have done if we had somehow made the discovery first. We would have bound you all to Thumar."
"I have no illusions, brother, and I am no fool. Of course I assumed such was the case. And perhaps all men would become tyrants with unchecked power in time. Still, the deposed emperor is more temperate and less likely to abuse.
With Sinead, it would be immediate, irreversible. He will lead us to ruin. That, I'm certain of. Your outfit might possess the means of stripping him of that power.
Hush it, Muldoon said, sounding drunk. Ain't buying a cap.
Sofjin looked at him. Careful, Lieutenant. You are slobbering again.
And you got caltrops in your cunny. But you're holding back, sure as spit.
There you go again with those troublesome S's. The captain snapped.
Enough of this.
I share his skepticism, Sof. While I have no doubt that you do not want Sinead holding the chains that bind you, I strongly suspect you want no chains at all.
She nodded slowly. Who among us wants chains, brother? I risk a great deal on this gamble. Everything, in fact. She pulled a sealed scroll out of a pouch on her belt and handed it to her brother. Darzak assured me you were close. That your scribe there, she said, looking at me with those intense and disconcerting eyes, was on the cusp of unraveling mysteries, unlocking the secret. So I agreed to throw my lot in with you, broke the blockade in Sunrak, and I am here now. Braelar cracked the wax seal, flicked the pieces off, and began to read.
That seems decidedly rash, for one so prone to evaluating everything coldly and deliberately. The good commander might have oversold our ability to break any chains, let alone reforge them.
Sofjin laughed. Be that as it may, what's done is done. I am here now, and as you can read, Darzak promised that if I aid you, I will be freed forever.
Braelar passed the scroll to Muldoon. And how long do you have, sister?
She returned his hard look in kind. 2 10-day, maybe less. I've never tested the limits before. I asked, how long until what?
No one answered right away, and then Vinduro cleared his throat. When that was met with more silence, he said, hesitantly,
Memrodon's got to report back to the tower that controls them, or this case, Emperor. While Sildoon always had Memrodons to chase them down if they went missing, the Memrodons themselves got a whole different reason for having to fly back to the coop.
Okay. What does that mean? What compels them? Clearly it isn't loyalty. As soon as the words were out of my mouth, I wanted to recall them. But Sofjin laughed a short, mirthless laugh and replied,
Isn't that the truth? No. It is forced fealty, Arki. A Memrodon has to return to the frame, in this case, held by the Emperor.
And what happens if she doesn't return?
Sofjin favored me with a mirthless smile. If a Memrodon goes too long without reporting back, convening with the frame, there will be a surge, and one of two things will happen. Her powers will be burnt out of her forever, or she herself will be snuffed out. So, I do hope you translate quickly. Now, I need to rest before continuing to scrub our trail clean. With your leave, brother.
Sofjin gave a small bow and turned on her heel, and began striding away before actually waiting to hear what Braelar said.
Muldoon held his tongue until she was out of earshot, and then turned to Braelar.
You ain't really thinking of trusting her, are you, Cap?
Braelar was watching a hawk circle lazily far above us as he replied.
Can you trust a viper to sheathe its fangs? Well, maybe not the smartest move to wear one around your neck, then.
It was difficult to hear his words alighting wetly, but while most people would have been self-conscious, Muldoon soldiered on as if he weren't afflicted at all, only looking more prone to violence than usual as his mouth betrayed him, but making no move to talk less or pay attention to how muddled he sounded. Perhaps Braelar's speech had inspired him, but I suspected he would have kept talking out of pure spite regardless, especially after Sofjin taunted him.
Braelar tore his gaze away from the circling hawk.
She is dangerous, there is no dispute.
but she has proved invaluable on two occasions now, instrumental in saving us.
And you, Vindoro offered,
and then looked sheepish as the captain glared at him.
Well, it was mostly Skilana on that score, but...
The captain's glare sharpened.
Yeah, she saved us all twice.
Muldus shook his head, and that much at least without impediment or difficulty.
Can't train a snake cap. Only a matter of time before she sinks her teeth into your neck.
As Morgan rumbled,
Aye, me and Mushrooms agree on that score.
Muldus flashed the massive lieutenant a hateful look, as Vindoro said.
I saw a Goethe geese once, had a box full of snakes, and they seemed to mind him well enough, doing tricks even, tying themselves in knots on command. Never seen anything else like it, people throwing money at him, dumbfounded they were.
The pale lieutenant looked ready to spit and thought better of it.
If it wasn't a horse that kicked you in the head, I can't figure what knocked your brain box loose.
He returned his attention to the captain.
Hugh were here, he'd say just what I'm saying. I didn't like having her around when she was a jackal, but now...
Braylar cut him off. Now her fate is tangled with ours. Sofjin has broken with the Emperor just as we have, though for reasons of her own. She is no less an outcast and branded traitor. And for the now, that makes her a useful tool and uneasy ally. One that could prove valuable again. Muldus shook his big head again.
Tools don't hate, Cap. Same ain't true of your sister.
And then he walked off, though with one leg seemingly at odds with the other. As Morgan shook his hoary head, chuckling.
You got a bitch of a sister, Cap. Right bitchy she is. But she gives Mushrooms the business. Entertaining as hell, that.
Vindoro said.
You got a queer sense of fun, you do.
As Morgan replied.
Wouldn't be the first I've heard that, squirrel.
There was a silence as we watched both lieutenants leave. Vindoro broke it by saying,
Want making that up about the snakes? Saw it with my own eyes. He had them doing tricks that just weren't snake-like at all. Unnatural. But Muldus got one thing right. A brass viper bit the handler right in the eye. Poor bastard's whole head swelled up, skin turned black and purple. Died screaming. So, yeah, snakes are real dangerous.
Heh.
Braylar laughed. And while it was abrupt and disappeared so quickly, it was easy to think I'd only imagined it. It sounded like he was genuinely amused. But then he stood there silently, gazing off towards the placid, polished lake with so many dead things littering the shore, like sacrifices made by foolish locals, or perhaps by the lake itself. And the levity was gone as he said,
Nothing is certain, save death. The only mystery is the means and who bears witness.
With that, he turned and walked away as well. Vindoro waited until he was out of earshot before giving a low whistle.
It was just a snake.
I replied, This animosity between the captain and his sister.
Hatred, more like. Animosity sounds way too plaguing polite to cover it.
Hatred, then, I agreed. But it is obviously more involved than a failed attempt to revenge his father. They were only children. And Sofjin mentioned something that sounded like it occurred years later, with the Sildoon. Do you know anything about that?
Happened before I was a jackal, he replied. Cap was never one to talk about it, which meant no one else was one to talk about it either. So can't rightly say. And you'd have bigger jewels than the snake handler if you ask him about it.
He slapped me on the back.
Come on, figure you got some penning or reading of some kind to do. Best get to it and get some rest. Figure tomorrow won't be no shorter than today.
Chapter 4 I returned to the wagon and recorded the events of the day, and then translated by lamplight until I couldn't fight sleep off any longer,
and collapsed into an ink-stained heap. But as usual, my bladder got the best of me and roused me sometime before dawn. It always seemed to conspire against me.